This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and today we have a special guest. Her name is Laura Brown, and she's written a book called How to Write Anything, A Complete Guide. It's a pretty massive book and so valuable. She's here to talk about it. Hello.
Hi, David.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm just fine. You're in New York, right?
I am. I'm in New York City.
Let's start out by talking about how this book came about. You can find a self-help book on anything, but writing anything, it's like, wow, what an interesting thing to help people with.
Well, it's kind of a long story, the way it all came about. I started a PhD program in English at Columbia, and I got partway through the PhD program and thought, you know, I don't think I'm a scholar. I'm enjoying this, but I don't think this is the right life choice for me. I ended up finishing the PhD just because I had started it. But during the course of the program, I started making my way as a freelance editor and writer, mainly business writing. And over the years, my clients would bring different writing tasks. Me, I'd be working with them on their business writing, and somebody would need to write a thank you note or a condolence message, or they would have a child applying to college who needed to do a college application essay, or this being New York City, they needed to do an application for nursery school.
Right.
So after about 30 years of that, I had a lot of experience writing all kinds of things. And at the time, there were still a lot of books on the market that were sort of collections of model letters that you could use that were, by that point, hopelessly out of date. And because the internet changed so much of the way we write, that I really wanted to do a book that would be helpful for everybody and really be responsive to the way we write today. So that's how the idea came about.
Do you believe anybody can be a writer?
I do. I really do. That's really one of my main premises. I think anybody can write. I think if you can talk, if you can express yourself, you can write. I think it comes much more easily for some people than it does for others. I think some people are, you know, people are born with different talents, and some people find writing easier than others do. I think also a lot of people have bad experiences in school, and that sticks with them. And I find that a lot with clients that I work with one-on-one. Like, I was always lousy at writing in school, or oh, my teacher said this was wrong, and it sort of gets into the back of your head, oh, I'm no good at this. And that's something that I'm trying to help people break through, because I think anybody can write.
Does confidence come into it, too? Is it, you think about, like, people who get up in front of a group and talk, and you think, wow, they make it look so easy. And yet the thought of getting up in front of a group of people and speaking, it terrifies so many people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think confidence is a big, big part of it. And as I say, I think if you've had some bad experiences or you've gotten some bad feedback on your writing, that really does undermine your confidence. And, yeah, I think, you know, it's possible to get some good experiences with it and start changing how you feel about it.
You're very easy to talk to. I'm enjoying it already.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. It's not hard to make me talk.
Now, do you talk at all about fiction writing in this book at all?
I don't. You know, and so many people have asked me that. Can you help me write a novel? Can you help me write a screenplay? And no, unfortunately in some ways, the book is completely practical. It's all about practical writing tasks. You know, I'm hoping at a later point maybe to do a slightly different book, because, you know, I really think writing is writing, and I think that a lot of the same tools that will help you write a business email can also help you write a novel.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a lot of the same muscles.
Right. Because books are interesting. You pick up a book, you know, and one person can love it, another person can say, well, how in the world can you read something like this? It's like movies. It's like anything, you know. Some people love it, and some people hate it. And, you know, I pick up a book, and if I can't get into it right away, I get very discouraged and very, you know, I'm like, what am I going to do? I can't get into this book, and yet I don't like to not finish something. You know, that's the way a lot of things in life are. I mean, why do a lot of people like a certain thing, and then... But there's also lots of people who don't, you know, there's just...
And, yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, people just have different tastes. And as you say, it's sort of across the board. I went clothes shopping recently, and I couldn't believe some of the designs that I was seeing. I thought, well, obviously somebody's buying these things.
Right.
Designing them, but yeah, we all have different tastes. I suppose it's a good thing.
Now, how are the chapters laid out?
The first part of the book is really about the writing process, and that's the section I think that's relevant to everyone, including people who write fiction or write creatively. I break down the writing process in a slightly different way than has been done before, and I hope it's more helpful. But the largest part of the book is almost 200 entries of different specific kinds of writing tasks that people have to do, and that's broken down into three sections: writing at work, writing at school, and writing in your personal life. Writing at work has the business email, it has advice about resumes and cover letters, sales proposals, things like that. Writing at school is writing in the humanities, term papers, literary analyses, how to write a lab report. It's just one of those things, I think, that, you know, you get an assignment and you think, oh, yeah, that's fine, and then, you know, 2 days before you look at it and you think, uh-oh, I don't know how to do this, actually.
Now, do people actually come in and offer, do you actually write resumes for people? I mean, are you actually in that?
Yeah, that's something that I do. It's not my full-time business, but yes, I do. That's something I specialize in doing.
That's neat. I mean, that what a timely thing that is today. I mean, it's so important to have a nice-looking resume.
It really is important. The job market is really, really tight. And I think, you know, it's tough. It's just tough. There's no use pretending that it's not difficult out there. But I think having a really sharp resume and sharp cover letter can make the difference.
Now, I should mention the book is from Norton. It's out in all your bookstores. It's a heavy book, too. It's one of those books you pick up and you think, wow, this is really a substantial book.
It is. It's over 600 pages. I was a little bit shocked when I saw what I had done.
How long did it take you to write it?
It took me about a year to write it. It took me about a year.
Wow. Are you a very organized person? You seem like you are.
I can be organized when I need to be. I wish that I were better organized. Part of what made the book go so fast is that there are discrete entries. You know, the entry on how to write a condolence message, for example, is maybe 6 pages long. And to some extent, the book is templatized, so each section will have an introduction, a model outline, do's and don'ts, a bad example, and a good example. So, you know, once you get that rhythm going, it's easier to.
Yeah, here's what not to do. I love that. It's great. At least I know what not to do. Now I know what to do, too. So it's side by side, and you can actually look and see. Oh, okay. I like the fan letter part. It's like, how do you write a good fan letter so they're going to look at it and be interested, not throw it away, you know? And a lot of times celebrities don't even see their fan letters anyway. Somebody is reading it for them. So.
Right. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that one. I like that entry, too. And I suppose it's a little frivolous, but it's, you know, it's something that people do want to write. And the example that I use is Tim Curry. I'm a fan of Tim Curry, and I think that there are a lot of people out there who are really fans of Frankenfurter and will write him these sort of crazy, deranged letters. But I think celebrities do appreciate a thoughtful, well-written fan letter. You know, they appreciate someone who understands their career and likes their work. So I hope I've saved some people from having some bad experiences.
Can you imagine having like somebody hands you a mail pouch, or you're a celebrity, and there's like 10,000 letters and sitting down and reading them? I mean, I'd be afraid to open some of them. It's like you never know what people are going to say. People have so many varied opinions about things.
Yeah, I think for good reason.
I remember Stephen King said one time he was at a book signing and somebody handed him a packet of blood.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And I'll never forget that, him saying that, and I'm thinking, what a weird... I mean, that's just an example. You can only imagine what else he's been handed in his career, and what kind of letters he gets.
Yeah. Well, I think with some people, you know, the lines get blurred, and they don't really, you know, this man is a writer of fiction.
I mean, it's the people that don't want to hold back on anything that scare me. It's like, what's going to come out of their mouth next? You just never know.
Yeah, well, some people can't be controlled, but I think, you know, people who want to write a nice, polite fan letter could probably get some good pointers from my book.
Now, what are you best at writing at? I mean, is there one thing in particular you're really best at writing?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I've had to write so many different things that I've had to become very quick at it and very adaptable because it's what I do.
So there's so many, you really can't pick one.
I don't think I can. I think my business emails are pretty good.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because
my personal notes are pretty good too.
It's funny because we send a lot of emails at work when I work, and people always say to me, "Well, don't say hello or anything because they know who you are." And
I'm not sure I agree with that. I guess I'm a little conservative when it comes to business emails. I always tell people, "Yeah, use a salutation and use a signature." And I think it's different if you're really, in the middle of an email conversation with somebody. If you have a thread going on, there's no need to use a salutation every time if you're just answering questions back and forth. But I think the first time you write to somebody, you absolutely should use a salutation.
You want to? I mean, the personal touch. I mean, who wouldn't love to receive a personal letter in the mail? It's a great feeling, and if somebody took the time out to write to me and say something nice to me, that would mean everything to me.
It really does, and I think, the ironic thing is that letters are falling out of fashion and fewer people write them these days, but it just means that if you're able to write one and you do write one, you really set yourself apart.
And you even talk about texting, how to write a text, how to text. You don't stop at anything, do you? I mean, here's how to really text. And I guess you're not a big fan of abbreviations, the LMAO kind of things, and all those silly abbreviations that some people understand all of, and some people don't understand any of them.
Well, I definitely use them when I'm texting, and I think it's appropriate for texting, but I don't think it's appropriate for formal writing, and I think that that's where the problem comes about, that I have friends who teach college and high school writing, and they're seeing texting abbreviations in their student papers. Students need to learn not to do that. But I think, I think it's fine in context. That was kind of one of the challenges in writing the book, was to really focus on who the audience was. My editor wanted me to do a section on Facebook, and I said, "Well, everybody knows how to use Facebook." And she says, "No, I would love to learn how to use Facebook." Like, okay, all right. So that's my assumption. I use Facebook, but not everyone has started. So then that's why I have the texting section in there as well.
That's a point too, because a lot of people are afraid to ask for help. I mean, why we live in a society where we're supposed to know how to do everything. So asking for help. But you shouldn't be afraid to ask for help if you don't know something.
Well, no, and especially these days because things are changing so fast. You can't know everything just sort of by osmosis. Remember, I don't know if you remember, MySpace was the big thing, and then it's virtually dead, and Facebook took over, and things are changing fast. By all means, ask for help. Otherwise, you'll be left behind.
You even have how to write a love letter in here. On page 87, it tells you how to write a love letter.
Something that I feel like people want to do, but they're shy about it. And then especially if you're carrying around that attitude in your head, I can't write, I'm not a good writer, I wouldn't dare to do that. That's the very thing that you should be writing. You should definitely go for it, and of course you're a good enough writer to do it. I think that's quite important and quite special. And a love letter is something that would be saved.
Now, here's an apology, how to write an apology. Now, do you think it's better to write an apology as a letter or in person?
I think it depends on the context. I think if you're able to apologize in person, it's better to do it that way. But the reason I included it is that it's not always easy to apologize in person if you're physically distant from the person that you want to apologize to. I think I have an example in the book of a boss who's behaved badly in a meeting and wants to apologize to everybody who was in the meeting. So rather than, going from one office to another, he'll send out an email apology.
Right.
And that's appropriate, and that's sensible.
Now, I like the fact you have how to write a book review. Now, book reviews, I mean, you read people's book reviews sometimes, and you're like, wow, that sounds really concise. I mean, you think, how difficult would that be? Just tell them how much you like the book. But there's so much more involved with it. I mean, you can't give away too much. You have to be pretty concise, and people don't want to read a 17-page book review either.
That's in the writing at school section of the book. I also did a Huffington Post blog on how to write a book review, which is targeted a little more at a general readership. Yeah, I think in writing a book review, you're really providing a service for the reader. You know, and you look on Amazon and you see all kinds of just really idiosyncratic comments. You know, complaints that the shipping wasn't fast enough, so the book gets one star. Well, that's not helpful to anyone.
Yeah, here's a letter to a neighbor. Now, when is it appropriate to write a letter to a neighbor?
Oh, all kinds of situations. If there's too much noise, or I grew up in the suburbs, and there were always issues over, you know, your tree is dropping pine needles onto our driveway.
I guess the trick is not to seem like you're being critical, and just to let them know that it bothers you, I guess. But you don't want to be a nag about it either.
Right. Well, it's tough because usually by the time you decide to write them a note, you're mad about it.
Yes.
And
you never want to write a letter while you're mad.
No, you really don't. You really don't. So you have to sort of get a grip on yourself. And they probably don't know. They probably don't know that it's bothering you. We had a situation when I was growing up, and this was in the 60s. There was a family next door, and they had two teenage boys, and they had a quote-unquote band. And they were awful. And every afternoon, they would practice House of the Rising Sun. And it was loud, and they'd have the windows open, and one of them was a drummer, and it was just ghastly. Well, the parents were both at work, so they didn't know this was happening. But it was, so it was a question of just saying, hey, you know, not sure if you know this is going on, but this is the effect that it's having on us. Can we work together to resolve this? Rather than just, you know, blasting them with anger.
Other than fiction writing, what else did you decide not to tackle?
I had a section in there about how to write a memoir. And the reason I wanted to include it is that so many people are starting to write memoirs, including myself. I have one that I'm working on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it tough to do that? I mean, when you sit down to write, I assume you're writing it now?
I've put it aside for a little while I'm promoting the book, but I'm dying to get back to it.
I find that fascinating. I mean, celebrities, of course, but, I mean, do you consider yourself a celebrity?
Certainly not.
I thought you were going to say yes.
Maybe it's the wrong answer.
Because you hear people say, well, my life's not interesting enough to put in a memoir or something. And I'm always thinking, it makes me think, you know, what in your life is so fascinating? And we've all had little things happen to us. But we all want to feel important in some way.
Right.
So you obviously feel important enough to do a memoir.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's not just me. And I think that, you know, so many memoirs that are so popular these days are not just about the individual who's writing it, but about the context that they're in. We can learn about people's lives and people's cultures, people's families. So the one that I'm working on is about a month in my life. I went to China in 1998, and I went with a client who's a professor at Columbia Business School who wanted to do a book on the Chinese consumer revolution. He's a marketing professor. So I spent a month there writing a book manuscript with him. He had some research assistants. But my father was born and raised in China, and I had always wanted to go. But, it's a big trip. It's a very expensive trip. So when I was not working on this marketing book, I was poking around Shanghai looking for sort of remnants of my father's life there. He left in 1933. But I found his old school. I looked for the house that he grew up in. I found the church that they went to. So it's not a memoir of my entire life. I'm not sure my entire life is all that interesting, but that particular experience was very interesting in the context that it occurred.
I always find sometimes when I write emails to people that I actually say more than I really want to. In other words, people can read into things that aren't there. Do you find that's true?
Oh, yes, yes. Especially, I think, well, I would say especially at work, you know, where you have to be terrifically diplomatic, where you're thinking something and you really can't say it, you have to say something related to it.
Exactly.
Not really come out and be as critical as you might feel like being.
Or people will say to me, you know, you said this so-and-so in your email. I'm like, well, I don't even remember saying it. And I go back and I look at it, I'm like, it's not really in there. But how did they kind of figured it out somehow? You know, it's
Yes. I think it's wise to be brief in emails for that reason, and also just because people are so busy that if you send a very long email, people are likely to just skip it. So, but yeah, you have to be careful in email because it's permanent. It's email is funny. It's somewhere between writing and speaking. It's very easy to fire off a quick email, a conversational email, but it's never going to go away. A lot of people have learned to their regret.
Right.
Emails stick around.
Now, let's talk about eulogies. Now, on page 112, you have all about eulogies. Now, isn't a eulogy better come from the heart?
I think you don't want to sound like you're reading, but I think it's a good idea at least to write some bullet points.
Mm-hmm.
And having done a eulogy for my father, I can tell you it can be scary to get up there. Can be scary to get up in front of people, particularly when you're bereaved, you know, and you're not really firing on all thrusters when you've had a loss like that.
What was the first thing you said? Do you remember?
No, I don't remember the first thing that I said. I remember.
A lot of times, and I've talked in front of people. I know that the worst part of it is the anticipation of it.
Absolutely.
When you get up there and you start talking, and all of a sudden you just realize, you know, people are listening to me, it becomes easier and easier the longer you're up there.
Right.
That's how.
I really like public speaking. I'm not one of those people who's afraid of it. I enjoy it. But in a situation like that, you know, where you're delivering a eulogy, you want to do it right. You want to get the tone right. You want to say what you really want to say. So it can be stressful. So I think it's a good idea to have some notes written out.
People love the personal touch. I mean, if a tear comes out of your eye, they love it even more. You know,
absolutely.
How can you not be moved by something like that? I mean,
absolutely.
But when I hear somebody talk, you know, like you said, I want it to come from the heart. I want them to. I don't feel like they're talking to me. It's not. They're just not writing something to get it over and done with. You know,
right.
that they really cared about this person. That they really want to tell you how they felt.
Yeah, and I think those are the best eulogies. And at my father's memorial service, we invited people to stand up and just tell stories. They weren't part of, you know, sort of the formal ceremony, but people that he had worked with. And those were some of the most memorable comments. People just said, well, I want to tell you a story about Justin.
Right.
Those were wonderful. But, you know, I think if you're on the spot, if you're a speaker at a funeral, you do want to have at least some bullet points written out. And I don't think it's going to make you wooden. I don't think it's going to make you sound like you don't care. It can help you keep going, you know, because you also don't want to fall apart. You know?
And I like that you talk about the timeliness of when to write these things, like an obituary or telling somebody a condolence letter. You should do it as promptly as possible, not wait a month or so and then write it, because it makes you seem like you're lazy. You haven't done it before.
Right. And in a case like that, a condolence message, I know it's not laziness. People don't want to do it because it's hard. You know, it's hard to write a condolence message. But, you know, you have to put yourself in your reader's shoes and think, they need support now. They need the support as soon as you can get it to them.
I know when my parents died, the most wonderful thing was to hear from other people and to hear how people care. I mean, that's what means the most to me. And I would assume most people are like that. You know, and you just, that personal, that people care enough to do something means everything.
It really does. It really does. I mean, you know how it feels. You feel like you've just been kicked in the stomach when you have a loss like that. But it is so, so helpful to hear from people. You really do feel supported. I think people put a lot of pressure on themselves with condolence messages. I think there's an unconscious feeling like you're supposed to think of the thing to say that's going to make it all right, which is crazy. You can't make it all right. You know, if someone's parent has died, you can't make it all right. You can give, though, what you have to give, you know, which is just a statement, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of you, I'm there for you.
Right, and I'm there for you, which means a lot. People say that to me, I really am moved by that. I mean, it's just a, you know, whatever I can do. If you need to talk, I'm here. You know, that's a great, great feeling to know that you have somebody you can talk to.
It is. It's really the greatest gift that we can give to each other when we've had a loss.
Do you think women are better writers a lot of times?
That's an interesting question. Maybe for something like that, because I think in general, and this is a generalization, women are probably more comfortable expressing feelings than men are, just because we're more used to doing it.
I love to express my feelings. I must be a weird man, but I just love it. I mean, I love to tell to something comes from my heart. It always makes me feel so good.
That's great. That's great to hear.
I mean, even if I cry during a movie, you know, I don't even care who sees. You know, it's like I'm a human being. There's nothing wrong with me crying. I mean, I'll cry with anything. A lot of things move me, and to be moved by something is a wonderful feeling.
I agree. I cry at concerts. I'm the same way.
We're human. We're not some kind of stone, you know, where we just don't react to anything. And who wants to be around somebody like that?
Yeah. No, it's true. I think some people feel like they shouldn't.
But I think, I mean, you don't find men writing a lot of letters to them. I mean, if I talk to a lot of my men friends, I'm sure if I ask them, you know, when's the last time you wrote a personal letter to somebody, they probably would say, well, email. But,
yeah.
I mean, who's writing personal letters nowadays?
Yeah, I don't really know. I think older people write more letters than younger people. And I think for a lot of young people, it just doesn't cross their minds, I could write a letter, because they're so used to writing emails.
I don't know if you've seen the show on Hallmark called Signed, Sealed, and Delivered.
No, I haven't.
You should check it out. It's all about mail that gets lost.
Oh, how fascinating.
I mean, it's a fascinating show. The first show, I broke down crying after the first show. You'll see when you watch it. Oh. You can get it on demand, but... It's all, and they actually read the letter during the show, and you find out little things. You know, somebody's lost somebody, or there's a lost love, or you know, it's every week it's something different. It's a different situation, but it's all about these people that work in this lost letter department. They make sure the letters get to who they're supposed to get to.
Oh, how fascinating! And then, do they follow up? Do they show you the letter being delivered?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And what a great idea.
And it's such an interesting show. I mean, and the people that work in this department are a little bit nuts to begin with. And
you'd have to be.
But you know, one of them's in love with another one, and actually there's two sets of couples really. It's just an interesting show. I'm surprised you haven't seen it.
I don't watch TV at all. I don't watch TV, so and this is something I'm reconsidering because I know there's a lot of great TV, but I fell out of the habit and. I have an ancient TV. I don't know if it would even work with cable or not.
There was a show not too long ago called The Locator. It was all about this guy who would answer letters from people who were trying to reunite with people they hadn't seen in years. And I used to watch that show every Saturday night and just break down. And you know, it was such a great feeling to see these people reunited after so many years, you know. 40 years and they get to see this person again, and it, there's nothing like that. The expression on their faces, you know, everything about it is wonderful. But he would actually read the letter in the beginning of the program.
Oh, that's lovely. And, oh, I would love that.
And you get to see, you know, if it touched him enough, he would do, and of course the guy had a lot of money, so he could fly all over the country and find these people and help them reunite. What a great thing to do for people.
That is wonderful.
I mean, you think about what your life's about. I mean, if you're helping other people, you're doing things that matter, you go to sleep at night and you think, I really did something nice today. It's a great feeling.
It is a great feeling.
Even if you've written somebody a letter and telling them how much you care about them. And here it is. Here's your book telling people how to do it, showing people the way.
Right.
And it's not like you're saying, you know, here's the way to do it. This is the way you should do it. You're not being arrogant. You're just showing people the right way to do it. This is proven methods.
I'm hoping that I can show people something that they can do and, you know, give them enough scope that they can do it in a way that's comfortable for them. Because there are all kinds of right ways of doing it.
What kind of reaction have you gotten to the book so far?
Very good. It's been selling very well, and people have been really, really nice about it. So I think it really is serving a need. I had, you know, I had some doubts. It covers a lot of ground. And I think people are, I think, you know, just about everybody can look at it and see something in it that would be useful to them. And that's really what I was hoping for. Yeah, it's been selling well, and I'm really thrilled.
Now, you actually have had to write a recipe in here, too.
Yes. That came from a personal experience. My aunt gave me her famous recipe for cheesecake, which she used to make every Easter. And it was a big treat. My Aunt Grace would bring her cheesecake around. And she gave me the recipe, and I couldn't figure out how to do it. And I realized, well, this recipe makes sense to her, but there were steps missing. And then I started looking into it. And there are rules for writing recipes, and they're all very practical. You know, how you really need to teach somebody how to do this from step one. And I got some help from Molly Stevens, who's a... she's written a few recipe books for Norton. She's a cooking writer. She has a sidebar in the book about writing recipes.
Right. Well, what do you do with somebody who just is not good at writing? I mean, there are just certain people who will tell you that I'm not good at writing things. What do you? How do they do it? How do people like that write all these things?
I work with a lot of people like that, and really, the first thing that I try to do with them is to figure out why. A lot of times people have writer's block, and they're not necessarily going to come up to you and say, hey, I have writer's block, because they might be ashamed of it.
Right.
Particularly with business people, I work with a lot of business people who are very smart and very accomplished.
Well, what do you do if you're writing a personal letter and you don't know how to, I mean, you look it up in the dictionary, obviously, but I mean, some people don't know how to spell and they're embarrassed that they don't know how to spell.
Well, yeah, and some people don't know how to use commas, and that sounds trivial, but again, it's one of those things that stays in your head from the past, and it's just constantly, I don't know what I'm doing, I don't know what I'm doing, I don't know what I'm doing. That's a terrible feeling.
You know what really annoys me? When people use the word T-O and T-O-O, and they get them mixed up.
Yes.
Oh.
That bothers me, too, but I have to say, sometimes if I'm posting on Facebook or if I'm writing really fast, I don't make that mistake, but I do the there, and there mistake sometimes. And the first time I caught myself doing that, I was horrified, because I thought, I would never do such a thing. And yeah. I do understand the difference, but I think sometimes you're just going so fast that you're not paying attention.
What was the last personal letter you wrote?
The last personal letter I wrote was to a friend of mine in England, who was here with me over Christmas, and I wanted to write her a letter.
And you can imagine, like, the troops in Afghanistan, how wonderful it would be for them to get personal letters. I mean, what a thrill for them it would be. I mean, you can only imagine. I mean, if I were over there and I got a stack of letters, all personal letters from people I knew, I'd be thrilled to death.
Yeah, and that's, I think that in particular is a situation where it's so nice to have the physical letter rather than the email. I know that they get emails, but they're just, yeah, they're so far from home. Just to see the handwriting of someone that you love, and maybe a newspaper clipping from the local paper or something like that. I know that there are organizations, I think it's called Operation Write Home or something like that, that promote writing letters to the troops overseas. I think it's terrific.
I know in my situation, I do worry a lot about what people think, and you can't really be that way, and it's difficult, because, you know, you write a letter, you think, oh, what's somebody going to think if I do that, or if I send this email, how are people going to take it? Are they going to take it the wrong way? Should we even worry about things like that?
I think you should, to some extent, but I don't think you should let it silence you.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's always good to think, when you're writing, how is my reader going to respond to this? I think that's a really great touchstone, no matter what you're reading.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a conversation. There's another person involved too. But I think it's terrible if it stops you. And this happens a lot with some of my clients. You know, like, oh, I can't write. And then, you know, we work on it and figure out, why is it that you're feeling blocked? Why are you feeling stifled? Is it the commas? Do you not know how to use a comma? Let me teach you how to use a comma. Then you'll know, and then that won't stop you anymore. So I think it's worth examining why you have trouble writing. The answer is not, oh, I'm just a lousy writer. that, you know, there's a deeper answer than that. And, you know, if you get into that a little bit, you can become a good writer.
For wedding invitations, what's the protocol these days about how soon before the wedding you're supposed to mail them out?
I think it's 2 or 3 months.
2 or 3 months?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, everybody's so busy nowadays. You got to give people time to plan in advance.
Definitely, yeah.
I mean, the more time, the better.
Exactly.
And now I know from my cousin, I got a note from her saying, save this date, the save this date letter.
Yes, yes. Yeah, people do that. They'll sometimes send out a save the date email before they send the printed invitation.
So you have writing at work and writing at school. They're the two big ones.
And also writing in your personal life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is...
Do you have a diary?
A diary? No, I don't. I have at different times in my life, and I have them on my shelves. I have journals.
Didn't you do a diary when you were in China?
I did, yes.
So you have that. So that'll help you write the book.
I have that, yeah, yeah. I tend to start a journal when, you know, there's something unusual happening in my life. And I love to go back and read them. And this is something I always tell people to save your writing. You know, there's a long tradition of saving letters from people. And I tell people to save their emails. It's just a treasure trove of information. I have...
And you go back and you read them, you're like, why did I say that?
I remember that. I remember doing
What's
that.
Wrong with me? Why would I say something like that?
Sometimes they're like, I remember doing that. I remember feeling that way. I remember doing that with that person, and we used to do... And it's just, it's great. I have an old iBook, one of the first... Knack books, I guess, one of the old clamshell ones. And I'm keeping it. I don't use it anymore. It was very good, but I don't use it anymore because it's so out of date. I'm keeping it only because there's a series of emails from my mom in the email program, and I can't figure out how to get them off. But my mother died in 2009, and it's just lovely. They're just simple, everyday emails. How are you doing? I went to the theater with Jean this afternoon. But just to have those emails and hear her voice, it's so valuable. So save your emails. Archive them. They'll matter to you one day.
Exactly. I mean, and it's great to look back. It's like looking at old pictures. You're like, wow, look at
it.
I mean, you pull out the old pictures and you just, the memories are, well, we have all these memories, you know? And
yeah.
It's so important to have that.
I did an event at a bookstore in New York City called Book Culture. They have an event, I think they do it every month. It's called Tea and Letters.
Mm-hmm.
And they push some of the bookcases or the book tables aside, and they set up tables with stationery, with nice stationery from Crane. And people just come in on a Sunday afternoon and write letters. They serve refreshments. So they wanted me to come and speak for the book launch, and I thought, well, what am I going to do? I don't want to come in and talk about business writing. So I found some letters that I had that I hadn't looked at in a long, long time from my father. When he was 15, when he left China, he was sent to San Rafael Military Academy near San Francisco. And this was in 1934, and I have about 6 months of letters that he wrote home to his family in China. And I went through them, and I pulled out a few threads, a few sort of narratives, and read them. He was a kid. He loved music. He used to go into San Francisco to hear bands. He heard Benny Goodman. He was really excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted a radio. And the story, you know, over the course of these 6 months, I want a radio, but I know I can never afford one. And then he and another boy figured out, okay, we can get this radio at Ward's for, I think it was $33.99, which was a lot of money in 1934. But he figured out how he could pay for it by cleaning other boys' rooms and typing letters for them. So just 6 months of letters, but from this really pivotal point of his life. And I got a glimpse of my father as a 15-year-old and what he was excited about, what he cared about, what he was worried about. It was wonderful.
Everybody's different. That's the beauty of it. I mean, everybody has a different thrill in their life. There's something that they love, you know.
And it's just great to be able to share that, I think.
I'm still looking through all the things in here. I'm thinking, wow, there's so much in this book. There's just so much to go through. And,
yeah, it is a lot.
it just makes me curious how you get past that. I mean, how do you build people's confidence enough to do this, to write, to do all this stuff? I mean, when you work with them in person, how do you build their confidence?
Well, as I say, we talk about writer's block. I try to figure out what's causing it. The other thing, and this the beginning part of the book, which is about the writing process, I hope is helpful. My experience is that writing is often taught in a sort of linear way, that you're taught to consider your purpose and your reader's needs, and then to brainstorm content, then organize that content, make an outline, write a draft, and then revise the draft.
Now, what about writing, say you put a word in that you don't necessarily think the person you're writing to is going to know what that word means?
Then use a different word,
yeah.
Really. I think if it's about communication and you want to communicate, you want to make sure that your reader understands, then give them something that you think they'll understand.
Because I know when I use words with people, sometimes they'll be like, well, what does that mean? You know, they just don't know what the word means, and it's kind of embarrassing for people.
You don't want to make people feel bad.
And it's all about, you know, getting the message through. I remember, some of the best sermons when I went to, used to go to church with from the people who spoke to me, and I just felt like I could understand everything they were saying.
And
that also works for reading a book. I mean, you read a book, and you're like, when you get to a part you don't understand, it's frustrating. It's like, I don't understand what that means, you know, and then who can I ask about that? I'm embarrassed to ask my friends. Sometimes I'll write to the author, and I'll say, I didn't understand this part, you know.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how when you write an email, it's a lot less embarrassing than if you're facing the person one-on-one.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. There's a little barrier there.
But if you go to a book signing, you stand up and you say, "Well, this I didn't understand this part of the book. Explain that to me." It can be a little embarrassing.
You're a little exposed.
Because you don't want the author to know that there was something you didn't understand.
Right.
I remember I was reading a book. I don't know if you've ever heard of Lisa Scottolini. She writes legal thrillers.
Oh yes, I have heard of her.
And she used she put JD in her books, and I had no idea what the JD stood for.
Oh,
and it's some kind of legal term, and I had no idea what it meant. And I asked her about it. I think it turned out to be juris something. Juris.
I think it's juris doctor. I think it's
yeah.
JD that lawyers get. Yeah.
And I had no idea what it was. I said, "What's the JD?" And I felt like an idiot, but I mean, I had to ask her because I was too curious not to.
Well, it's good that you asked. And, you know, whenever I teach, I say to my students, ask me a question, because if you have that question, I guarantee you there's somebody else in the class who has the same question and just isn't brave enough to ask.
Exactly. I remember my mom used to be like that. She says, I'm afraid to ask questions because they know so much more than I do, and I'm afraid I'm going to look dumb.
No, I think...
Haven't we all looked dumb at some point in our life?
It's part of learning. It's part of growing.
It is, and we're not growing if we don't look dumb. Sometimes.
You know, unfortunately, it's true. You have to be willing to make mistakes.
Everything's confidence. We want to know everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why watching Jeopardy is such a wonderful experience. You know, you want to take all this information in and save it and remember it 15, 20 years from now.
It is amazing. It's amazing what some of these people remember.
I think we have to let you go because I think I've gone over my time. But boy, you're such a fun person to talk to. You really are.
Oh well, I'm having a great time. It's really enjoyable speaking.
I hate it to end, but the book again is called "How to Write Anything: A Complete Guide," Laura Brown, and it's from Norton. And it's all your bookstores. And is it actually an ebook?
It is not an ebook at the moment. It's an audio book.
Oh, it's an audio book.
Yeah, which surprised me a little bit, but I think it can be helpful as an audio book.
Now, do you read it?
I do not. There's an actress who read it, and I actually worked with her a little bit because there were some sections that she thought were very visual. So
how long did it take for them to record the? I'm curious.
I don't know.
I've always been curious to see how long it takes them. You see these huge audios, and like, boy, this must have taken forever to do this whole thing, because it has to sound perfect.
Yeah. Well, I listened to a snippet of it, and it sounds great.
Oh, that's great. That would be very helpful, especially if you're driving in a car and you want to go through the book. And
I think so, especially if there's a specific section that you need to write that day. It's all there, and I think she did a terrific job.
So what's upcoming in your writing now besides the China thing?
I really want to do a book for new college grads entering the workforce.
Oh.
And my working title is Writing in the Real World. I think that it's harder than it used to be to make the transition from writing at school to writing at work.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, people our age graduated from college, and we had to learn this thing called business writing. It was a separate genre. There were business letters that had specific forms. There were memos, proposals, things like that. And they were very different from anything that we had written before.
Mm-hmm.
I think what happens now is that students graduate, and they go from emailing their friends to emailing their bosses. And they learn the hard way what's appropriate and what's not appropriate at work.
Well, that should be a cool book. That'll be very helpful.
I think so, and I see it as kind of a small book, and not just about writing, but also about communication at work. When should you make a phone call versus writing an email versus walking into somebody's office and saying, okay, can we talk about this?
So you love speaking in front of people.
I do.
Have you always been like that, or was the first time you did it, were you terrified?
I was scared. I think I was about 19, and I was at Pasadena City College, and I had to make a speech, and I was scared, and about halfway through it, I thought, I like this.
Really?
This is fun. People are paying attention to me.
I was talking to a friend of mine at work about that the other day, and he's terrified of getting up in front of a group. And
I think most people are terrified. Isn't it like the largest phobia that exists?
And I said to him, I said, well, you're so confident otherwise. You're confident with other people. You show people how to use computers, and you're a whiz at computers. I said, well, why should it be any kind of a problem?
Yeah, I don't know. But I know that there are people who have whole businesses around helping people with public speaking. I think it really is a big fear that people have.
I don't know. I wonder if you can teach people to overcome that fear. I wonder if it's just like anything, like any fear, you have to just do it to get the fear to go away.
I imagine that part of the training is just getting up and doing it.
Just do it. I mean, just...
Yeah, I think people who have those businesses training people, part of it is, you know, stand up and try it, and then they go back and look at, okay, what went well, what could you have improved, and then I think it really is through practice.
Because I've heard Barbara Streisand talk about her anxiety before a show, how really anxious she gets, and but once she starts singing, I mean, my gosh, I mean, it's like, why even question anything else? You're wonderful at what you do.
Yeah, we're just so subjective, exactly.
We're so afraid of doing something wrong, you know, that we don't want to embarrass ourselves.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But, you know, you don't get anywhere unless you take risks.
Well, you're doing a great thing. You really are. It's nice to teach people how to do things.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, it's been wonderful.
Thank you.
And the book, again, is called How to Write Anything, A Complete Guide by Norton, by Laura Brown. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, Baldacci.